we're kind of like looking back because there's a lot happening in science. There's this real clarity now looking back in the rearview mirror. But what's amazing is it's a clarity that the high wire has proved to have had the entire time. We knew where we were looking, but one of the big transformational moments for us on this show, in the middle of COVID, when there was not a lot making sense, we were trying to find our balance, there was one guy, Kyle Seidel, an ER doctor in New York, that I will always say, this was like the Paul Revere moment that came out and warned the world, we are doing something wrong. We do not understand this virus. The way we're treating this in hospitals is wrong. Everybody listen to me. We must stop this now. This is what he had to say.
9 days ago, I opened an intensive care unit to care for the sickest COVID positive patients in this city. In these 9 days, I have seen things I have never seen before. In treating these patients, I have witnessed medical phenomena that just don't make sense in the context of treating a disease that is supposed to be a viral pneumonia. COVID-19 lung disease, as far as I can see, is not a pneumonia and should not be treated as one. It appears as some kind of viral-induced disease, most resembling high-altitude sickness. I have seen patients dependent on oxygen, take off their oxygen, and quickly progress through a state of anxiety and emotional distress, and eventually get blue in the face. And while they look like patients absolutely on the brink of death, they do not look like patients dying of pneumonia. The patients I'm seeing in front of me look most like as if a person was dropped off on the top of Mount Everest without time to acclimate. I don't know the final answer of this disease, but I'm quite sure that a ventilator is not it.
Well, I mean, I think that even in the middle of the crisis, it was clear that the ventilators were killing 9 out of 10 people. Something was wrong with the approach. But now a brand new study is shedding light on the fact that it may actually not just be COVID that was killing people, but a secondary infection caused by the hospitals themselves. Take a look at this, is the headline. What really killed COVID-19 patients, it wasn't a cytokine storm, suggests study. It goes on to say this, by applying machine learning, so AI basically, to medical record data, scientists at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine found that secondary bacterial pneumonia that does not resolve was a key driver of death in patients with COVID-19. It may even exceed death rates from the viral infection itself. It goes on to say, our study highlights the importance of preventing, looking for, and aggressively treating secondary bacterial pneumonia in critically ill patients with severe pneumonia, including those with COVID-19. We have been saying this on the high wire almost the entire time. COVID is not killing people. Medical malpractice is. The fact that we were denying treatments that work and using treatments that did not work is a real reason, I believe, why over 1 million people are now said to have died from COVID in the United States of America, one of the worst death records in the entire world when it comes to COVID. Well, one of the doctors that we had on very early had a solution and was talking about this secondary infection, and it was all he could do to hold on to his license and his job, like all the others that were speaking truth. I'm talking about Dr. Richard Bartlett, and this is what he was like when he was on our show a long time ago.
As an ER doctor, you're wanting to stabilize your patient. And so if they come in and they tell me, I can't breathe, I'm going to try to help them breathe.
Right.
And so this actually is effective. They on their first breathing treatment, many people tell me that their shortness of breath and their chest pain goes away during the treatment. They don't feel like they're drowning anymore. COVID is an inflammatory lung disease. Budesonide is an anti-inflammatory medicine for the lungs. It blocks the release of all the inflammatory chemicals that are released with COVID. But beyond that, how about a targeted approach? Because if you use IV or oral steroids or steroids as a shot, which are commonly used, these are the side effects every time. You decrease bone density, you decrease muscle mass, it can cause anxiety and insomnia, it decreases the ability to heal, it decreases your immune system's ability to fight infection. And one of the potentials is a secondary bacterial infection, double pneumonia or a bacterial pneumonia. And so why would we want that? Why don't we use a targeted approach with inhaled steroids where you're actually turning the faucet off of these cytokines being released into the body, which is the killer, right at the source.
Why isn't it sweeping America? Why do we not?
Well, there's definitely censorship. And so the video that you saw, 5 million views, and then YouTube pulled it. Twitter pulls it. It's against the messaging that we're supposed to be following.
He had an interview with Matthew McConaughey on the internet.
Yeah.
And he said to Matthew that Budesonide is just a placebo, Matthew. It doesn't really work. Oxford University said the opposite. Oxford is the oldest university in the English-speaking world since 1096. 72 Nobel Prize laureates. They say that he's wrong.
Over and over again, this was being buried. Medicine's FDA approved 25 years ago. It's well documented to be an effective, safe strategy for decreasing inflammation in the lungs,
right,
the airways, and that is what COVID is about.
Amazing, right there in the middle of it, Dr. Richard Bartlett talking about the secondary infection, trying to take care of the lungs right away with budesonide, a steroid, inhaled in the lungs, all the advantages over that, over-injected steroids. It's my honor and pleasure to be joined now by, you know, a truth teller, a prophet, if you will, in the, you know, what you saw, where things were going. First of all, you know, we really haven't had a moment to hang out, and because you were one of the busiest humans in the middle of COVID I'd ever seen. You treated almost everyone in our company when we were catching COVID. We went with the protocol that you were sharing with us, and you always took our phone calls. But I mean, honestly, I think you must have been working, you know, 20-hour days. It was really crazy. Have you gotten a little rest now that COVID's sort of in our rearview mirror here?
Well, life is still busy, but Dell, I want to congratulate you and the High Wire. When other sources were on purpose hiding this life-saving information from the public, you went out of your way, you went out on a limb, and you told the truth, life-saving information. And so thank you for what you did.
Well, what's amazing, I mean, you know, there's a lot we can get into, but just the fact that it wasn't hard to make the decision because, honestly, what were the side effects? I mean, you know, inhaling budesonide.
No risk.
There's like relatively zero risk. And so even if it didn't work, who cares? We're talking about someone saying, I don't know, you're likely to die, you know, especially if it's going south and we don't have a single answer for you. But the idea of attacking every answer that seemed to come up, you know, and budesonide was a big one. And you've been exonerated time and time again. You have the Oxford study that we've discussed. We want to take a look at that really quick with budesonide. This is what Oxford had to say. Common asthma treatment reduces need for hospitalization in COVID-19 patients, study suggests. Oxford, this is, folks. The findings from 146 people, of whom half took 800 micrograms of the medication twice a day and half were on usual care, suggest that inhaled budesonide reduced the relative risk of requiring urgent care or hospitalization, meaning before you ever went near a vent, by 90% in the 28-day study period. Participants allocated the budesonide inhaler also had a quicker resolution, sort of a lower dose, you know, a little whiff inhaler even seemed to work. And that's going back February 9th, 2021. The answer was there, yes. And yet there was this huge pushback. You know, why?
Dell, we were told to be afraid, be very afraid. We were told shelter in place, literally hide in place, and just trust the government to come up with a new miracle, one time, one shot, done deal.
Right.
As soon as we had enough of the population, quote, vaccinated, we were going to get our normal lives back.
Right.
Did we ever get our normal lives back after one shot?
No.
And so no. There was definitely an agenda. I think we can say that openly now.
Yeah.
Because it clearly misinformation was coming from the top.
Yeah.
Anthony Fauci dissing budesonide, saying it's not effective, that it's a placebo, in front of the whole world, on the heels of me spilling the beans that we have a strategy, we're not helpless or hopeless.
You know, he wasn't the only one. In fact, he inspired a revolution against you. Just let's take a look at this.
Let's get into this viral video by Dr. Richard Bartlett, who claims to have the silver bullet treatment for coronavirus using inhaled steroids budesonide. That simply isn't true. That's simply false. He's found this treatment that's right in front of our eyes, very common medication that nobody knows about. I just have to laugh.
It's a treatment for COVID-19, but others in the medical community aren't convinced it's what it's cracked up to be.
There is no silver bullet at the moment, and there might never be.
There is no silver bullet response to the virus at the moment, and there might never be.
You're hearing things about things that are just so too good to be true. It probably is.
There's no scientific proof.
He claims inhaled steroids are the cure for COVID-19.
And I wish it was as simple as that.
The CDC also says there is no known cure for COVID-19, so we can verify that claim is false.
People who are thinking about maybe getting some off-label use of budesonide, that do not do that. We can't tell you that that's going to help you, and there's even a possibility that if you use these steroids too early or too much of them, that you could harm yourself.
There are people that believe that budesonide and taking zinc is working. Is there any downside to doing it?
You know, there's a placebo effect to make you feel better and less anxious, but in reality, Matthew, it doesn't have any effect.
And to think that simple medication is the cure that could have saved 500,000 people.
I watched that and I just think I'm glad they were on camera. We'll never forget, you know, how ridiculous those statements are. A brand new study just came out, I think it was 4 weeks ago. Once again, looking at budesonide and fluvoxamine. Here we go. Oral fluvoxamine with inhaled budesonide for treatment of early onset COVID-19, a randomized trial. Also found the proportion of patients observed in an emergency setting for COVID-19 for more than 6 hours or hospitalized due to COVID-19 was lower in the treatment group than the placebo group. And so it continues to go on, you know, 80%, 90% reduction, especially if used early. And what was so shocking about this whole thing, and we talked about it in the middle of it, we're here now looking back in our rearview mirror, was this idea that there was no early treatment. Don't treat them early. Send them home. Wait till they're blue. Their lips are turning blue. Now they're, you know, so now this study is saying it's the hospitals that killed people, right? So they sent you away. When you got here, then they threw you on a ventilator, usually remdesivir, and then I think 9 out of 10 death rate. And what I wanted to ask you is, what was the protocol? Because, I mean, looking back now, it seems to me we denied people just getting regular oxygen masks. They come in, I'm feeling a little bit sick, I think I might have COVID. You know, they look at the oxygen. Why not put them on some regular oxygen? Give them steroids. That just seemed like standard of care up until that moment for any sort of respiratory illness like this, wasn't it?
Putting someone on a ventilator is no small thing. You literally have to chemically paralyze them where they cannot breathe. Even if they are in distress and they feel that their oxygen's going low, they are paralyzed, they are helpless, trapped. And then you put them on a ventilator. Ventilator-associated pneumonia is a whole nother level of risk of death of pneumonia. Once you put them on a ventilator.
So even if you take COVID out of the equation, yes, there's this known risk to ventilating people.
Many risks with ventilators. Okay. And we saw every one of those, including when they would increase the pressure. If you put someone on a ventilator, you have a risk of popping their lung, a pneumothorax, where you're going to cause a tension pneumothorax, where it presses the heart over to the side, impairs the return of the blood to the heart, and kills you quick if you don't treat it immediately.
Wow.
Called a tension pneumothorax. There's a list of known risks that you have just set them up for by putting them on a ventilator. And I can tell you, as a doctor that has been in the middle of all this, that there have been doctors that have oversold ventilators telling patients, you look tired. That's not an indication to put someone on a ventilator saying, you look tired, you want to rest? Let us put you on the ventilator and you can rest for a while. That was insanity.
Wow.
That was non-science. That was dangerous. It was deadly for many people.
Well, and even Kyle Seidel went on to say in the longer version of that video, I am talking to people. I've never before taken people that are talking to me and said, well, your oxygen level's low. Let's put you in a coma and put you on a ventilator. He's like, usually when we're venting someone and putting them in a coma, they're already in massive distress, usually aren't speaking to us, not breathing. This was staring people in the eyes and basically walking into the bed that would be the last bed they ever laid into.
50 years of medical common sense, good judgment that has been tried and true got thrown out the window January 1, 2020, Dell, all the way to even what in my hometown where the emergency room, a level 2 trauma center, was putting bags over people's heads. They came in the ER and tested positive for COVID
so that
they wouldn't spread it to the workers, to protect the workers. Nonsense, non-science, hard to believe these things were happening, but there was no good reason for putting people on ventilators early.
What do you think of this study? I know you took a look at it. I mean, they're basically saying that this whole idea that there's a cytokine storm, that using sort of AI and computer learning, studying all these records, here's the study, we have it here. Machine learning links unresolving secondary pneumonia to mortality in patients with severe pneumonia, including COVID-19. When we look at this, this idea that it was really this venting, this secondary pneumonia that killed more people than the COVID, what are your thoughts on that? Does that make sense to you?
Yes. And so the paper that I published very early that you covered said we need to give a protocol that's not just budesonide, which will decrease, will shut down the release of the cytokines after every treatment, mm-hmm. but also clarithromycin, an antibiotic that has been proven to cover and protect from mycoplasma pneumonia and all the walking pneumonias that don't have a classic cell wall.
Is that similar? Because I know like the Azelenko protocol, DDR, we talked a lot about that, was hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin. Azithromycin is a similar.
It's a similar one, and it's going to be just as effective against the walking pneumonias, but research proved before COVID that clarithromycin had a higher coverage, would protect at least 86% of the people from encapsulated strep pneumonia, which is what you need to cover people for. And the azithromycin was sometimes only 78%. I like 100% success, so yeah. I'm gonna go with what's most likely to bring success the first time, and clarithromycin was the choice.
Right, and that's actually what we got when you sent over the package we were supposed to be using. So then there's another part of this study that says that this cytokine storm idea, that they're saying there really wasn't a cytokine storm associated with COVID-19. And when I called you, you pushed back on that a little bit.
So, well, absolutely, there was definitely a cytokine storm. That's a common pathway for inflammation in the lungs, is for these inflammatory chemicals called cytokines to be released. Interestingly, the research was already done almost a decade before showing budesonide suppressed the release of every one of those that is involved in COVID, which includes tumor necrosis factor, interleukin 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 11, 13, cyclooxygenase, thromboxane that increases clotting. Every one of those was shut down with budesonide. So there is a cytokine storm. That was what led to a primary viral pneumonia, and that could lead to a secondary bacterial pneumonia. If you take care of it, 90% of the people wouldn't have ever gone to the hospital or the ER. They wouldn't have gotten bacterial pneumonia because it never would have progressed.
Right.
But then we were also giving clarithromycin, which would take care of the people that were at risk of getting bacterial pneumonia or had early bacterial pneumonia.
You have a great video of a guy that ends up in the hospital, and obviously they're saying, no, you're not allowed budesonide. He fights his way through that. This is awesome. Everybody, take a look at this.
I had a hard time being able to eat. And the oxygen levels are dropping. Three days of the treatment, 3 days. I'm in shock of where I am today. I was 3 days ago, just with this treatment that the doctor said will not work. It will not work. And that's where I am today. Praise God and thank you, Dr. Bartlett.
That's amazing, and just countless stories like that. We have so many friends. We were talking just before we started the show here today, with our staff, so many of us were talking to friends, we were getting them the budesonide, and they were saying, oh my God, within hours, I can breathe. And, one of the things I remember that shocked me, that really hit me, because I think prior to talking to you in the middle of it, I was under the impression that this COVID thing was really that it wasn't a fake epidemic necessarily, but is really being overblown. It seemed like it was in this tiny group of elderly, and I wasn't even sure it really existed, but you sort of set me straight. You said, Del, no, this thing is very, it has to be taken very seriously. It is not on everybody, but the people that are being affected by it are having a really bad time, and you yourself had a pretty bad about.
Yeah, and so, you know, I would run a 7-minute mile on the treadmill, no medicines, no pre-existing conditions, and I found out it was a killer firsthand when I could not walk across the down the sidewalk in front of my house to the end without stopping. I knew I was in trouble, and so the protocol worked, but absolutely it's a bioweapon. Absolutely, it was not natural.
Yeah,
we had CDC Director Redfield a month ago talk to the Congress, and he explained why it was the evidence that it was manipulated, that the research was published by the Wuhan lab on how to alter it genetically and create this disease. So there's no confusion. This is not a normal virus. And so fortunately, COVID's over, but we can learn from the lesson. Number one, Del, people need to listen to the right voices. And if there is a source that has purposely misled people and has changed their narrative over and over and over again, they need to stop listening to those channels.
I agree.
They need to listen to those that have sought out the truth and have not changed their tune, which is the high wire. And so I appreciate what you've done.
Well, I mean, look, we have watched, we've shown the videos on this show of Walensky, who we've just, you know, who's just resigned finally. Not a moment too soon, I would say. But really, I don't think she's to blame. She was just a puppet for an entire system that was lying. And, you know, we can argue over what the full agenda was. Clearly, a needle in every arm in the world using this moment, you know, to get us all to be injecting whatever latest, hottest vaccine is out there. And I think that failed. If that was the agenda, massive failure. And we now see vaccine, you know, resistance at the highest level probably since the introduction of a vaccine back in, you know, polio or smallpox. Right. When we look at this now, when you look at Walensky and you look at what was being said, the amount of time she had to correct herself, and yet you've never had to correct yourself. We really haven't had to correct anything. I'm so proud of how the things we've said together and apart has aged. Is anyone, I mean, your hospital system that you held on to your job, and has anyone come and said, hey, you know, sorry we were so hard on you, nice work, you know, you did a better job saving patients than anyone else around here?
Adele, I haven't received any apologies, but I've had a lot of people call me and thank me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fauci did not do a retraction on possibly the most dangerous misinformation that has ever been spoken on the planet. When he shut down a treatment that would have prevented at least 90% of hospitalizations. Remember, the hospitals were overflowing and they had hospital
ships
on both coasts.
Now, was that real? I mean, again, I mean, my perspective, I was like, I've tried to, it seemed to me that hospitals were shutting down because if you didn't have a ventilator next to a bed, you weren't allowed to use that bed. They weren't using regular, you know, oxygen.
There was a point where the hospitals were overflowing, but it could have all been prevented. And who was in charge of the direction? Who was the White House expert? And he's the guy who said that it was just a placebo. And so that was just one tool. That by itself led to countless deaths.
Yeah.
And so people should be careful to weigh everything out, think on their own, not just swallow anything that's spoken by a quote authority figure. I mean, the CDC was saying for monkeypox to wear a mask. They still are on their website. Del, is it a respiratory virus?
Right.
No, it is not.
Right.
And so just because something's said by an authority doesn't mean that you have to believe it and blindly believe it. You know, Zev Zelenko was a friend of mine, and he said, blind faith only belongs to God. I think that's a healthy thing to live by, to weigh things out and to use your brain and to not just believe it because it's the common narrative.
Do you have any concerns? You know, I talk about it. I'm worried that, you know, here's what I've learned. Here's who I have learned to trust. I have actually learned to trust, you know, Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, these people, when they tell me that I'm going to be under attack soon. when they say this is just a rehearsal, that there's an even worse virus coming, these things are, they've actually said, we need to prepare for the next one. The next one could be really big. I've learned to take their word for it. Do you think we should be taking their word for it? Should we be thinking that there's another virus around the corner?
Yes. I am certain that when they promise us future pandemics, that they are, I mean, they've told us the pandemics. We had Redfield say it's going to be a weaponized bird flu that kills 10 to 15%. Mm. We've had Bill Gates say that there's going to be smallpox. There's going to
just
be...
Just give that perspective. Yes. COVID is 0.35%, I think, is the ultimate death right now when we look at it. So 13% would be
and so that's
catastrophic.
Why so that's why Redfield said COVID was just, this is the literal words that he used, COVID is just a wake-up call. He used the word great pandemic will be a bird flu.
The great pandemic is coming. It's going to be a bird flu pandemic.
And so have we seen a bird flu wipe out huge populations before? Never.
Right.
How could that be? I think we've learned a lot. All the world has learned about gain of function research.
Yeah.
We've seen them bragging that a Boston University has created a COVID strain that can kill 80%. We've seen South Korea's CDC bragging that they have a COVID strain that they've created that could kill 80%. In nature, we have never had to deal with these things before. But when they say certain things, I don't think we need to not take it idly. I think they should be investigated when they're saying things so with such certainty.
We got a glimpse into, you know, none of us were really in the White House, but Peter Navarro was. He was standing there right with Donald Trump when all this hit. He was in an interview recently and really kind of laid out when he was calling bull crap to all this very early on. Take a look at this.
I walk in there. I don't know any of these people from outside the White House, right? So who's
who
there?
Else was in that room?
Redfield from CDC and Fauci from
NIH,
right? Those were the two big players. I go in there, and within 6 minutes, I'm in a shouting match with that son of a bitch. And all he keeps saying is
With Fauci.
I don't know who he is. Okay.
Literally,
I didn't know who he was, didn't know he walked on water.
Wow.
Didn't know he killed tens of thousands of people during the AIDS epidemic and got away with it. That's another story. Don't know who he is, but you know, it's like somebody walks in here and sits down here, you don't know who he is, and you start interviewing him. What do? You take their measure, right? Mm-hmm. And my measure of Fauci was, this dude thinks he's a whole lot smarter than he is, and he's an arrogant son of a bitch.
This is within the first 6 minutes.
6 minutes.
Sounds like an Antonio Brown interview.
And I'm, you know, one of the things I'm good at is taking the measure of people pretty quick. My boss is good at that too, Trump. And I'm thinking, what? And so I fight with this guy.
Wow.
Mulvaney, I'm fighting with him. Redfield comes in and supports Fauci. And we leave that meeting with Mulvaney tries to say, all right, we have a consensus. We're against the travel ban. I said, no, Mick. There's no frigging consensus. I just like it. No, Mick. There's no consensus in this room. And Pottinger finally says something. He's a National Security Council. And what I do that night is I go home and I write a memo that I'm going to plaster to the entire task force and broad chain that says that if we don't do this, this virus is capable of killing 500,000 Americans and costing us trillions of dollars. January 28, 2020.
Hmm.
And that's about the best memo I've probably ever written because it was spot on. And here's the punchline. Fauci, when he was sitting there, that SOB knew for a fact that virus came from the Wuhan lab. He knew that because he had funded the gain-of-function research in that lab, and he had already begun to design a cover-up. And we know that from the emails he sent to a group of researchers, academics, trying to get their support to push that come-from-nature theory. And that's the biggest lie of omission in American history. Because if he had simply owned up to the fact that thing came from the lab, we could have pressured the Chinese to give us the genome sequence, which would have allowed us to design an effective vaccine rather than the crap we wound up getting. And again, Trump got lied to about that, not just by Fauci, but by Pfizer, the drug company.
In what way?
They didn't disclose the side effects of that. And they weren't clear with him. They made him think that it was a true vaccine when it's not.
It's a lot to unpack there, actually, and you know, I'm not sure that a vaccine was ever going to be the answer, but as he's pointed out, this has had horrific side effects. We all waited a year, didn't treat anybody, no early treatments, over a million have died, you know, waiting for that savior, the vaccine, which didn't do its job, didn't stop the pandemic, seemed to have no effect on the death rates, the infection rates whatsoever, and I think that's proved out really perfectly in New Zealand and Australia.
Safe and effective.
Yeah, two perfect examples that didn't have the virus yet, got vaccinated first, opened up their gates, and they have some of the highest death rates from COVID we see in the world. So the whole thing really stinks, but this gain of function, I mean, this week, Peter Daszak is skipping and dancing in front of the world because EcoHealth Alliance is being given another contract to do more of this lab work that is, he was involved with at Wuhan. We're seeing headlines in the middle of a war in Sudan, and oh, there just happens to be a bioweapons lab there. Oh, and in the middle of Ukraine, like wherever there's a war, there's apparently some bio labs that some, you know, dark forces kicking in the doors, some warlords. And so when we think about the future, I mean, we've got to, I'm not into this whole disease panic thing, but it just feels like the morons have got a hold of the steering wheel right now.
It does feel that way. And, you know, he mentioned that Fauci and Pfizer lied to Trump. They lied to everyone.
Yeah.
And it left a trail of tears, death, and destruction. And so we need leadership and we need advisors that actually are going to have the people's best interests at heart, not corporations' best interests at heart.
Yeah.
We've seen that that's played out. I guess there were benefits to the COVID shot. I'm just going to say that. $38 billion benefits in 2022 for Pfizer.
Right.
$18.5 billion for Moderna in 2022 alone. I don't consider that. How much is a human life worth, though?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the fact that gain-of-function research is happening when we had a moratorium against it because it was too dangerous. What's going on here? I mean, it got outsourced from the United States to Wuhan.
And honestly, what good has it done? I mean, with all, let's say that.
What could
go wrong? Let's say it didn't escape in the lab. We weren't prepared. Apparently, we were studying a coronavirus. That's why we're doing the gain of function. We finally get one, and your vaccine is a totally useless pile of crap. So in the end, even if gain of function had a value, you just proved it has no value. You knew nothing. It didn't help you. Your understanding didn't matter how many people were in labs looking at it in the Sudan, in North Carolina, in Wuhan, in Ukraine. They're all staring at the thing, but the moment one of them gets out, they're like, I don't know what to do. It doesn't make any sense to me. Here's what I do know. You shouldn't use steroids like we do all the time. Definitely don't give anybody any antibiotics. Make sure they avoid things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that seemed to work in every study we did 10 years ago. Let's make sure we avoid all of those things, which just in the end, it gets harder and harder to not think that there are, you know, strings being pulled that are not being designed for the good of humanity and certainly not the good of the United States of America.
Agreed. Well said. And so, you know, you think about, I said this July of 2020 in an interview that went viral. I said, you're not going to make a one-time, one-shot vaccine for a rapidly mutating respiratory virus. We have the evidence of that for 40 years where they tried to do that with the flu. And so, you know, 3 years later, we see that it wasn't a one-time, one-shot. And actually, Fauci said many times he was planning on everybody getting a shot every year till they die.
Yeah.
Well, that was the end point.
I'm amazed that they even say every year because so far it's been like 2 years and we're on number five. So
right.
It looks like two a year, at least 2 to 3 a year. And that's doing nothing for anyone. We're seeing negative efficacy. We're seeing the more of these vaccines you get, we see this, you know, coming out of Cleveland Clinic, you know, amongst doctors and nurses, the more they got the vaccine, the more likely they were to be infected. So the thing's a total disaster.
The Pfizer data that we received from the FDA after the Freedom of Information Act request that had to go to court because they did not want to release it for 75 years, the very first drop of data showed 1,200 adverse events, bad outcomes associated with their product. According to Pfizer, they made the list in the middle of it, Dell, it had Kaposi sarcoma, AIDS cancer. Can you think of any medicine or product that has ever had that as a risk? It also had dozens of autoimmune disorders. And this was a list made by Pfizer about their product. And they knew about it. They had myocarditis on the list, and they didn't list that. I'm an ER doctor that works many times at a heart hospital, Dell. Guess what I take care of? Heart problems.
Yeah.
People who come in with chest pain, heart attacks, sometimes they're in distress. We do many tests, but there's one test, the troponin test, a blood test, that looks for heart cells dying. Mm-hmm. You have to have living heart cells that have troponin in it die, burst, spill into the bloodstream, and we catch it on the blood test at the right time. A study just came out of University of Basel in Switzerland saying 2.8% of patients that had the shots that they studied had elevated troponin, meaning heart cells died.
Wow.
What heart cells do you want to die?
Right.
No. And does everybody have chest pain that has heart damage? No. Many people can have silent heart attacks. And so, and not everybody's going to realize that they have a problem if they have a little discomfort or shortness of breath after a treatment that has a risk of almost 3% having heart cells die.
Yeah. And that's just one of the side effects.
That's just one.
You start adding in all the other side effects, blood clots, you know,
heart attacks, strokes,
heart
yes,
attack, all these things.
Cancer.
So I want to thank you for taking the time to come up here. Let me sort of ask you what would be, I guess, the doomsday, you know, million-dollar question, which is, if you are concerned, which I know you are, of something else escaping from a lab or something out there, what's at the top of your list? What are the things in, you know, are there any ways that doctors can be preparing for those things?
You know, Del, my message on that very first interview that went viral and triggered you reaching out to me, mm-hmm. I said, we're not helpless or hopeless. We have never been.
Yeah.
That's been the message. We were told to hide in place and just wait for a magic
There'll never
answer.
Be a cure. None of these drugs will ever work.
And who told us that, by the way? It was Fauci who led a effort to try to make a HIV vaccine for 30 years and has failed over and over and over. He's a serial failure in vaccines. And but I am convinced there will be other pandemics. They've told us that. I know what they are. That they've listed, mm-hmm. and there are treatments already available. There's actually things that have been studied by our own government against smallpox, for instance, that have been proven to be effective. Yes, there's a study that shows NTZ, an antiparasitic that they used, and they saw some benefit. And there's reports that the Native Americans used a purple pitcher plant and had some success against smallpox, for instance. But if it's something like CDC Director Redfield called out, which is a weaponized bird flu, guess what the common pathway is for disease? It would be a cytokine storm from chemical poisons released from the lung lining. We already have a tool that has already been proven in the COVID pandemic to be effective. Budesonide will shut down the cytokines. We have tools. There's other things when the time comes. But people should not, first of all, the term fear porn, that came out of the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
And they earned it. And so we don't need to be paralyzed in fear, which was what we were told to do. Stay at home, hide in place.
Yeah.
And listen to the right voices. And don't listen to the loudest voices that have been wrong over and over again.
Yeah.
The high wire has been a lifeline for many people. They heard the truth over and over again. And I applaud you for what you've done so far.
Well, look, I mean, all we were doing is what the scientific method should have demanded, which was allowing every voice to the table. We were hearing plenty of those that were saying none of these products work. And I was like, well, let's listen to the ones that are saying it works and why. Why is this not an open discussion? And by the way, when I start seeing censorship of great doctors that are standing next to patients saying this doctor saved my life, and all of a sudden their LinkedIn disappears, a YouTube video goes down, I think we should all, if I had one lesson, if you start seeing a scientific, you know, an established doctor that, you know, is speaking truth being censored, I would go ahead and try and figure out what that person was trying to say. I think we now know that censorship is probably the badge of courage, and we should be taking that very seriously. You know, I had this debate with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who tried to say you follow consensus, you know, but science is not consensus. Science is about the scientific method. We should be hearing all people at the table. And now all the people that are at this table are the ones that proved to be right. You are one of them. And I hope you get some some moments of a bit of a personal dance in your backyard for, you know, really having called this, and your ability to say, I told you so, I think is off the charts.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, the scientific fact is reproducible and observable. It's not negotiable. It's not a majority of hands going up and deciding this is the thing. That's not science.
Yeah.
And so thank you for what you've done. And we'll be here. I'm going to be in the ER a lot.
I hope we're wrong. I hope that we never see anything like this happen.
If it happens, we won't be paralyzed in fear.
Okay. We know what to do.
Yes.
I know the first call I'm going to make. Dr. Bartlett, it's such a pleasure knowing you. Thank you for taking
the time.
Thank you,
Dale.
Join us.